From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. You know, I enjoy tales of the Old West. On film, I love the westerns of John Ford and Anthony Mann, Bud Boddicker, Raoul Walsh. I love Gunsmoke on TV. And I love the western literature of Louis L'Amour and Max Brand, Elmore Leonard, and Larry McMurtry. A few months back, Jeff Gwynn was on this program discussing his compelling biography of Charlie Manson. He's also written about Bonnie and Clyde and the gunfight at the OK Corral. Now, Jeff Gwynn very successfully tries his hand at Western fiction with his new novel, Glorious, and joins the ranks of L'Amour and Brand and Leonard and McMurtry. Jeff Gwynn, welcome back to From the Bookshelf.
It's a pleasure to be back on your show, Gary.
Your hero does not know how to ride and he does not know how to shoot.
Well, the whole idea of writing Western fiction is something I only considered after I did my nonfiction book, The Last Gunfight, because I thought there was just so much rich history to the West, and maybe even more dimension to it than we often see. And since so many of the people who came West determined to make their fortune weren't experienced gunslingers, probably hadn't ridden a horse, they may have watched the back of one from behind a plow on the old farm back east, but I wanted to sort of take readers right into a time and place where people who had no frontier skills whatsoever might come out there and try to change their ways to make a living in a very hard, harsh land.
Your book, Glorious, it has maps on the end papers. Louis L'Amour, he said that he did a lot of research and that he felt that his readers, if they looked for a certain rock that he referenced in one of his Western novels, that rock would be there. Well, now, you're a historian, and we know that you're famous for creating authentic settings. Did you do a lot of research for Glorious?
Very much so. To begin with, once I had the outline of the story I wanted to tell about Cash McClendon coming out to the frontier from St. Louis and finding himself in all kinds of things that he'd never expected, I wanted to find a place to set it, so I got in my car and I drove all around Arizona. And one day, around a curve on Highway 60, about 17 miles west of Globe, suddenly there it was, the Pinal Mountains just rising up, but you know, like great crooked teeth over the highway, they're blood red. A gorgeous bridge hanging over a wide rippling creek, Queen Creek. And so everything that readers will discover about the mythical town of Glorious really exists. And in the notes for the book, I even give some directions how to get there if you want to go see it. And also, the other big challenge was if I was going to write about prospecting for silver, I thought I'd better try it myself. And it turns out to be a lot harder than we might have expected.
You say you actually went out there and looked for the stripes and the rocks that you discuss in the book?
Oh, yes. When we've got Cash McClendon and some of his friends prospecting for silver in Queen Creek Canyon, I was actually out there. I had thought that prospecting for silver, you know, you just kind of look for something shiny. And it turns out that usually with silver, you just, if anything, see some faint black lines on rock. You have to chip off pieces of the rock, take them to be assayed where they're pulverized and put through a chemical mix to see if there's even any silver in there or not. I not only didn't find any silver, I had a hard time breaking off pieces of rock. The rock hits back if you hit it from the wrong angle.
Well, maybe you're not a grizzled old guy like you're supposed to be.
Well, I'm grizzled and I'm old, but when it comes to prospecting, I'm afraid I don't have the gift. But what I really wanted to do for readers is entertain them. I mean, that's what fiction's for. And at the same time, really help them feel like they're in Arizona Territory in 1872, with all the dangers, with all the tensions, and frankly, with some of the primitive living. Just riding a stagecoach into the frontier usually left people nauseated from the constant bumping. There was a lot of heat stroke. It was a tough place to go out and try to live.
Western movies very seldom have anything about the outhouses or any of that, but you include that in your story.
Well, I want readers to feel like they're going along with Cash McClendon. And, you know, for instance, on the stage rides that we see usually in the movies, when do they take their comfort breaks? that was a big part of being out in the frontier, finding a safe place to relieve yourself. And for folks back from the, you know, coming from the East, that was quite the dilemma. The food on the trail, we try to describe accurately in the book, you know, it was hard going, and yet there were wonderful rewards. It's beautiful territory. It was possible for a man or a woman to make something of himself or herself. And that was another thing I tried to do with the book. Women of the West were not sort of simpering little creatures who had to wait to be rescued. For a woman to survive in the West, she had to be smarter and tougher than any of the men. So I also tried to have very strong female characters in this book.
Of various ages.
Yes.
Yeah, I appreciated that.
Well, that's the whole thing. Not everybody who came out West hung very raw, able to fight anybody in a brawl. I wanted to show what would happen if you have well-meaning, ambitious people who have to come out there and learn how to adjust not only to the things that they can bring, the skills they have, but their flaws, too. Cash McClendon, I don't think, is a flawless protagonist by any means.
No. You also talk a lot about, and I want to get back to your characters, your human characters in a minute, but you also talk a lot about horses and mules in the story, which I appreciate. Are you a rider? Have you done a lot of riding? Did you do some mule versus horse research for this story?
I have ridden some horses, particularly when I was researching The Last Gunfight, my nonfiction book. I thought I would try to ride some horses in the same area where a lot of the rustlers and the lawmen wrote, down towards Tombstone and Bisbee in Arizona. I couldn't find a mule to try riding for this book, but I did find a historian whose grandfather had a farm that raised and sold mules in Alabama. So he gave me some pointers on the good aspects of mules. If you point them in a direction, they'll keep going. And the problem with them, that when they've decided they've gone far enough, they will just stop.
Did you also research the Native Americans of the period and of the area?
Certainly. The book is set in 1872, and it's the first in a series, and I'm hoping to take readers through 10 years on the American frontier, 1872 to 1882. And already in 1872, in Arizona Territory, the Apache were in their decline, and most of the ones who were still out fighting were down in the southeast corner of the territory with Cochise. But the ones who were still in central Arizona, northeast Arizona, these were Native Americans for whom survival did not necessarily mean, you know, all-out obvious attack. And the people, the whites who were trying to settle the area, always were aware that even if they couldn't see the Indians could see them, and that it was very dangerous to go out just by yourself. You might get picked off. So I wanted to show the danger from both sides, how the Native Americans were always at risk themselves, even if they weren't doing anything warlike, because people would simply shoot. And the settlers, who certainly knew that their lives were in danger from the Indians. Neither side trusted each other, and both of them were right to feel that way.
Well, I want to be very careful to avoid spoilers, because there's a lot of surprises and mystery in Glorious. But when you tell us that there'll be further books in this series, some of the characters may reappear that we've met?
I think you can definitely count on that. I really like the idea of hopefully showing how characters, people, can change and grow when they interact over a series of books. That's one of the pleasures of writing series fiction instead of just one standalone novel. But I also hope that Glorious will keep people interested and that it stands alone as a story itself.
It's a great story. I highly recommend it, people. It was really a lot of fun to read, and you know, whether you like Westerns or not. I mean, you know, actually, the thing about genres in general is, you know, if it's a good book, it doesn't matter what genre it is. But if you happen to be a fan of the Western genre, then you'll love it even more. But, you know, even if you have never read a Western before, try glorious, I think. But tell me, Jeff Gwynn, what Western influences? I mentioned some of my favorite things. So what about you? What are some of your Western influences?
Well, you know, I grew up in America in the 1950s and 60s, and the ubiquitous cowboy shows on TV. My goal in life was for the Lone Ranger to come to my birthday party. And when I was in my late 30s, I actually interviewed Clayton Moore.
The actor who played him.
So that was sort of a dream that came true. I heard the Lone Ranger say my name. In terms of literature, we all admire what Larry McMurtry does, and I think he does it better than anybody else could, taking history and sort of bending it around into a great different sort of story. My favorite Western novel of all time is Little Big Man by Thomas Berger. Mm-hmm. And it was also a fabulous movie. I don't know if you've seen it, Gary.
Oh, sure. I've seen it and read it.
And that's one of my favorites. And there was a great Texas writer named Elmer Kelton who recently passed away. And I got to know Elmer, and I admired the way that he always kept his books true to the history, true to the time and place. And that can be hard to do, and you know, and still be able to entertain readers. I've tried to do that, but I also want the readers to know that the history in the book is real. I promise it is.
Scott Eyman, the film historian, who's recently written a book about John Wayne, was here not too long ago, and we were talking about the demise of the Western and what's happened to it and why it doesn't exist anymore, and we all have our theories about it, but it seems like Glorious would make a good TV miniseries.
Well, we never know about that, but I do hope that maybe some people who have avoided Westerns in the past, I had one friend say, why do you want to write a Western? It's like watching professional wrestling. And I just don't think that's true. I think there can be a richness to the story and a high level of quality entertainment. And maybe somebody will read Glorious and think, well, you know what? Maybe I should read some more Westerns. It's an integral part of our history as a nation. And there's so much mythology out there. Maybe it would be fun to read a book that captures the way it was.
If we could, I would like to cast Jimmy Stewart in 1939 in the role of Cash. Who do you see? Did you have a person in mind, or did you just create him?
Well, the character sort of came together bit by bit by bit. I wanted someone who had the ability to become a better person, but had a past that certainly was not a shining example of being wonderful. This is somebody who succeeds as a young man in St. Louis because he's good at being deceptive. He's good at tricking people into doing what he and his boss want. And then he comes out to the frontier, and he just, you know, any of the qualities he had in St. Louis that helped him there mean nothing. And he has to start over, and it's a hard, long process. And during the series, maybe we'll see Cash bit by bit learn not only how to survive in the West, but hopefully to thrive there. And in term, I have a terrible time with actors' names.
Okay.
But when I was working on this book, my wife got me hooked on a Western series called Justified.
Uh-huh.
You know, the guy's out modern day.
Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah, he's up in the hills or something.
Mm-hmm.
And in my imagination, that was the way Cash McClendon looked, but if you read the book and like it, I'd really prefer you to think of him looking the way that you would want him to.
He looks exactly like me. It's a funny thing.
Well, there you go. I mean, we get the miniseries going. Can I recommend you?
I wish you would. I think that'd be great. Jeff Gwynn, let me ask you. You just finished or published recently this book about Charles Manson, and I know now you're working on a book about Jonestown. And you wrote about Bonnie and Clyde. How does your nonfiction inform your fiction?
Well, whenever I write nonfiction, what I'm really doing is writing about an era in American history, and then I try to take an iconic individual or event that to the general reading public would represent that time. The Manson book was really about the 1960s. I wanted to write about the 1970s next and show how America changed during that decade. And fortunately or unfortunately, the phrase "don't drink the Kool-Aid" has entered our national lexicon, and it wasn't even Kool-Aid. So I thought it would be interesting to write about the 1970s through sort of the prism of Jim Jones and his so-called ministry. When I write fiction, what I like to do is I like to take the real vital history that I've learned and put it together in a story that, again, hopefully entertains readers. And who knows? I mean, if somebody reads Glorious and they're reading, there's some real people in it. It's not Forrest Gump by any means, but, you know, there's some actual individuals right out of history. Maybe they'll say, well, I'd like to learn more about that. Maybe I'll read some nonfiction about it, too.
Well, tell us a little bit about the progress you're making on your Jonestown book. I'm looking forward to it. It's hard to say that I enjoyed reading your Charles Manson book because, you know, it was horrible, but it's a great book, and I really did enjoy reading it so much. I was completely engulfed in this story. So how are things progressing with Jonestown? What is the process?
Well, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to follow Jim Jones throughout his life. As with all my other books, if I'm writing about someone, I'm going to go everywhere that person went. We are already finding, I think I can tell you this safely, that a great deal that has been believed about Jim Jones's childhood or assumed about it turns out not to be true. And the real story of how he turned to a ministry and then turned that ministry into what he did is a lot more colorful and complex than we'd previously believed. There are still people alive who were involved and who have never talked about it. So we're making progress there. I'll have another year and a half to 2 years of research on it, and then I'll start writing. So it'll be a few years yet.
So then while you're doing that, you can also work on stories of Cash McClendon that they can go side by side?
Yeah, it's a wonderful release, really. I got to know Robert B. Parker, you know, the great history writer. And Bob talked about how his best writing days came when he worked on one book in the morning and a different book in the afternoon because it left him refreshed for both. And sometimes now, I'm currently on a national tour for Glorious, which will end up in Florida in another 5 days. And right after that, I'm going back to Indiana where Jim Jones was born and doing some more things there. And what I'll do is I'll go out and I'll interview people about Jim Jones during the day and at night back in my motel room. I've finished the second book in the Cash McClendon series, and now I'm putting together the notes for number 3.
Wow, well, that's that's really fun. And so now you're on the road talking about Glorious and you're meeting people like me who have read and enjoyed the book. That must be a rewarding experience. What's that like?
Well, a couple things have surprised me. Whenever you bring out the first book in a series, you don't know what the reaction is going to be. And there are a few people who have said to me, well, this isn't the kind of Western I like. You know, people need to be shooting more, and we need more Indian attacks and so forth. And I understand that what they're saying is they're looking for what they believe is traditional Western entertainment. And I hope it's in the book. But maybe there's a little bit more realistic dose than they've been accustomed to. Maybe we can help them enjoy a wider view. The other thing that's amazed me is I did not, you know, we generally assume women don't read Western fiction. Clearly that isn't true because easily half the folks who are coming out to my programs and coming to see me in the bookstores are women. And they seem very much to like the fact we've got strong female characters in the book. We don't have, you know, sort of the one-dimensional schoolmarm who's going to fall in the protagonist's arms after he, you know, shoots up all the bad guys on the last chapter of the book. We're going to have multi-dimensional women who are tough because they have to be to survive, and it seems that the women readers like that.
When you're writing a story like Glorious, as opposed to writing a nonfiction book, do you find that the that you're always in control of your story, or does it sometimes go in a direction you didn't expect when you're writing?
Sometimes doesn't even enter into it. When I write fiction, I know how it begins and I have a vague idea how it ends, and everything in between sort of has to come along as it will. And there were things that happened in the book that surprised me. I don't want to give too much away, but the people who have been pursuing Cash McClendon from St. Louis obviously have to find him out in the frontier towards the end. And I had no idea how they were going to do that. And then I was writing a chapter, and all of a sudden there it was on the computer screen. I was going, wow, that's amazing. So the way I look at it is, if I don't have fun writing it, if I don't get excited when I'm writing it, how can I expect readers to enjoy it? So I have more fun if it's just kind of happening as I work and the characters gradually reveal themselves.
And they're great characters, and it's I just loved the book. I think it was really great, and I hope that our listeners will rush out right now and order it or buy it or whatever you do these days.
And when you star as Cash McClendon in the TV miniseries, I hope they all watch you.
I hope so too. And I hope that when your next volume comes out, we can chat some more, and maybe then we won't have to worry about spoilers, and we can talk some more about the plot of Glorious as we get into the next volume. When will we see the next book?
The next one should come out in May 2015. We're doing one a year.
All right. Well, I'll be on the edge of my seat until then. Jeff Gwynn, I want to thank you so much for coming back to From the Bookshelf.
Gary, I always enjoy talking to you, and I hope we get the chance to do it again.
Talking about westerns with Jeff Gwynn put me in the mood to hear this great classic from Marty Robbins.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me in Rose's Cantina. Music would play and Felina would whirl. Blacker than night were the eyes of Felina, wicked and evil while casting a spell. My love was deep for this Mexican maiden. I was in love, but in vain I could tell. One night a wild young cowboy came in, wild as the West Texas wind. Dashing and daring, a drink he was sharing with wicked Felina, the girl that I love. So in anger I challenged his right for the love of this maiden. Down went his hand for the gun that he wore. My challenge was answered in less than a heartbeat. A handsome young stranger lay dead on the floor. Just for a moment I stood there in silence, shocked by the foul evil deed I had done. Many thoughts raced through my mind as I stood there. I had but one chance, and that was to run. Out through the back door of Roses I ran, out where the horses were tied. I caught a good one, it looked like it could run. Up on its back and away I did ride, just as fast as I could, from the West Texas town of El Paso, out to the badlands of New Mexico. Back in El Paso, my life would be worthless. Everything's gone in life, nothing is left. It's been so long since I've seen the young maid. My love is stronger than my fear of death. I saddled up and away I did go, riding alone in the dark. Nothing's worse than this pain in my heart. And at last here I am on the hill overlooking El Paso. I can see Rose's Cantina below.
is strong and it pushes me onward. Down off the hill to Palina I go. Off to my right I see five mounted cowboys, off to my left right a dozen more. Shouting and shooting, I can't let them catch me. I have to make it to Rose's back door. Something is dreadfully wrong, for I feel a deep burning pain in my soul. Though I am trying to stay in the saddle, I'm getting weary, unable to ride. But my love for the leader is strong, and I rise where I fall. Though I am weary, I can't stop to rest. I see the white puff of smoke from the rifle. I feel the bullet go deep in my chest. From out of nowhere, Bernina has found me, kissing my cheek as she kneels by my side. Cradled by two loving arms that I'll die for, one little kiss and Bernina goes.
Classic El Paso from Marty Robbins, closing the book on this week's From the Bookshelf. Hope you had a good time and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, you can check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Jeff Gwynn. His new book is called Glorious and it's really great. You should go out and get it right away. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.